Hi there. Nice to be here in Berlin. Berlin means very much to me. When I was 7 years old, we moved here to Berlin. Me, my mother, my sister, and my father. My father was a good opera singer, and he was engaged at the Deutsche Oper here in Berlin. So we moved here, and we lived on Königsallee, in the near von the big park out there. And it was a fantastic time. I mean, we came here right from America. I was born in America in 1956. And my father made his debut 1962 in Gothenburg as Pinkerton in Madame Butterfly. And so then he was engaged here. We moved down here, and I went to the Deutsche Amerikanische Schule, John F. Kennedy Schule, here in Berlin. And I learned the language. I spoke it fluently in those days, Icke, Nicke, Dicke, and all that, you know. So that's actually one of the reasons I am back here. Ulf brought me with here to speak a little bit about my singing and my background and my family. And it's so interesting to hear you integrate music and art in your work, in the LaRouche movement, and I think it's fantastic. Music means very much, and art means very, very much to human beings, more than we actually believe. It's been the main thing for my family. My grandfather's name was Jussi Björling, and he was considered the world's greatest tenor in his days. And it actually began before Jussi. Jussi's father, David Björling, was a great singer. And I'll show you some pictures here, if you can see them. Of course, the older man there, that's Jussi's father, David. And he was a very special man. He was very stubborn, and he wanted to sing in a very early age. He was only 15, 16 years when he started to sing really professionally. And he sang in choirs, and he wanted to go to school. And his father had problems because in those days you had to learn a trade. And in our family we were blacksmiths. So his father wanted him to be a blacksmith. But he didn't want to do that. So his father didn't know what to do with him, and without an education, no money, and how could he support himself or even a family? Well, his father had so much problems, so he sent him to a friend of his, a very tough man, and he said, I'm going to make a man out of this boy. But after a month, he sent him back, and he said, I can't do anything with this. He's too stubborn. He just wants to sing and do his music. So he left his family and went to Stockholm and started to study music. And he was a smart man, because whenever he heard that the king was going to show up somewhere, he was there at that place. And when he saw the king come out of a building or anything, he sang. And the king in those days, the king of Sweden in those days, Oscar II, he wanted to be a tenor. And he, of course, he heard David sing and was impressed. So he took up his own wallet and paid for an education for him in Vienna, at the Conservatorium of Music in Vienna. So he went down there and he studied and he got a good degree, and then he came back to Sweden. And before the First World War broke out, he did his debut in Gothenburg, also as Pinkerton, like my father, in Madame Butterfly. And I mean, he was a great singer, and I read the reviews. They're very good reviews. But when the conductors and the music directors told him how they wanted him to sing and so, he said no. He was very stubborn. And he said, no, I'm going to do it my way. So they just thought he was very hard to work with. So his opera career ended quite shortly. And he worked as a filer, making where they made those machines where they separate the cream from the milk. And he got tired of that, and then suddenly he disappeared. Nobody knows where he went. And after a couple of years, they wanted to give him his death sentence because they didn't know where he was. Then he shows up. And the story is this. He took the boat to New York, to America, and started to sing just to make money. He sang at restaurants and around. And there were some people that heard him. And they thought, wow, that's a good singer. So they took him to the Metropolitan Opera School. So he started there. And he studied for Caruso himself. But when Caruso told him that he thought he should sing so and so, he was stubborn. He said, no, I'm going to sing my way. And at one time, that was a very big, they didn't agree. So Caruso slapped him in the face, and he slapped Caruso back. So that's when he packed his bags and went back to Sweden. So then he showed up in Sweden, and they found out that, well, he's been to New York. He went back up north to Dalarna, Dalakalia, and there he met the beautiful, up there they call the ladies kullur, he met the beautiful Kulla. And Esther Sund was her name, and she was singing in a choir, and they met in this choir, and they fell in love, of course, and they started making these boys. The boy on the right-hand side, his name was Olle Björling. He was the firstborn and had a fantastic voice. They all sounded very alike, all these boys. The boy to the left down, that's Jussi, my grandfather. And the tall boy was Gösta. He was the youngest of them. So he started with these three boys. They were actually four boys. But when the fourth boy, Carl, when he was born, their mother died out of tuberculosis on her 35th birthday. So the father, David, was left alone with these three boys. But he started singing with these three boys in a very early age. They were just like four or five years when they started to sing. Because in those days, if you didn't have if you didn't learn a trade or something, it was hard to make a living. And he didn't have a trade. He just knew how to sing, but he was a smart man. He took these boys and he taught them how to sing, and then he took them out and they did concerts. And then this constellation, they were called the Björling Male Quartet. And they sang all over. These small boys, and they put them on the little boxes and things, and they stood there and sang, and the ladies were crying. Well, it was fantastic to see these. And of course, David sang too. Unfortunately, there is no proof, there is no recordings of him, but they say he had a marvelous voice. And as the boys grew and they grew older, after a while, he went back to America and he took the boys with him. And they toured America for 18 months and sang all over America for all the Swedish and Scandinavian people. And all these beautiful Swedish songs that people recognize. So it was actually, you've heard of Michael Jackson and the Jackson family. I mean, this was just like that. And there is one more thing that is like between the Jackson family and this family. David Björling, to make money when he was in America as a boy, he earned money being a prize fighter, boxing. That you could do that in those days, and you made money. And that Michael Jackson's father did that too. So it's a very remarkable family, and they all sang. So here you see four singers, and Carl, the little boy, he started singing, but very much later. My father was an opera singer, and my aunt was an opera singer, And so we've been almost, I think we're 9 persons that have been living off singing and music. And of course, music has been, it has meant so much for my family. And it made my family, it gave us a chance to stay alive and make some money and live off of it. Music is, I mean, it's very, very important. I think it's sad nowadays when you see the modern cultures, you see the pop cultures and everything, that's, they just want to make, they simplify and just want to make money out of it, instead of trying to find art that gives you something into your heart, and that says something. And that's what I think is fantastic with you. You use art and music in your movement, and I think that's fantastic. A man that has written a song that is, I think, is one of the most beautiful songs regarding art and music is Franz Schubert. He wrote a song, An die Musik. And that's what it's all about. It's An die Musik. And I'd like to perform that for you. So you see, music is very important to all of us. Of course, it's very important for us to sing and perform it. But even even for young people and the people growing up nowadays, think about how much music can help and soothe people. Music is a universal language. And if you know music, you can speak to anyone in the whole world that understands music. Because, like now, we don't need words, we just need the music and we can perform together. And that's fantastic, and I think it should be more like this in politics and integrated around the world. So I think that could break up the ice very much. And I think a problem around the world is that we don't understand each other. If everybody could speak the same language, it would be easier. It's the same for these boys. These boys, they didn't have an education, as I said, but with the music, they could perform together. They could go all over the world, and people could understand them. And they spoke to people's hearts. All of these three boys, they became great singers. You've heard of the three tenors, of course, but these could have been the three tenors easily. The color of their voice, I'd like to say something about that. The only difference was, they say that Gösta, the oldest, the tallest boy there, his color, it was like gold when he sang. It sounded like gold. And Olle, the smallest boy, he sounded like silver. But Jussi sounded like steel. That's how they divided them in character. Otherwise, when you hear them, it's very hard to tell the difference from the boys. And that was the father. He had this idea, how you should sing. And that gave them hope for life, and they could travel the world and communicate with music. When he grew up, he started very young. He was only 17 years old when he came into the opera school in Stockholm. And that's a very, very early age. So the headmaster of the opera school, his name was John Forsell in Stockholm. When he first heard about him, he said, no, he's 17 years old, that's too young. He can't come in here. But after a while, when they pressed him, he said, okay, let the boy audition. So Jussi came up there and he sang for him, and it was quiet. Not a word was said. After a couple of minutes, he looked up from his desk and he said, Mr. Björling, he said, I cannot do anything for you. And Jussi was, oh, I did a bad audition. No, I cannot do anything. God has already done everything, he said. So he started there as a young person. Of course, that's tough, being very young in this business. I mean, singing opera and with other opera singers, it can be quite tough because of the competition. So you have to be strong and be a tough person to be able to do this job. But he was so good. His quality of singing was so good. So nobody wanted to fight him in any way. I know one time he was singing in a choir and during the opera school. And sometimes he came late. It was a big church they were singing in. So the conductor, he fired him. He said, you go home. You can't come late like this. And we don't need you here in the choir. Go home, and I don't want to see you again. So he walks out, and he slams the door. And then he opens the door down and he puts his face in there and he says, try to find a better tenor if you can. So he knew of his greatness. This took them all the way to Metropolitan, the Metropolitan Opera. And of course, that was a big thing to travel. Because when you come to the Metropolitan and you sing there, you don't sing just at the Metropolitan. It's an opening there, and then they travel all over America to all the big opera houses and sing. So that made him world famous in that way. And then when he came back during the war, he didn't want to go there because he was afraid of going overseas and getting bombed. Ships and so sank out there. So then he stayed here in Europe, and he traveled all over Europe and sang. He sang here in Berlin once. After the war, and uh, So he really made it big all over the world. And one day, there was a young man in Italy. His name was Luciano Pavarotti. He listened to one of those old recordings with a man called Jussi Björling. And that's when he decided he wanted to be a tenor and sing just as good as Jussi. I met him and he told me this story because he wanted to be a professional football player. Yes. You should see pictures of him. He was slim, very slim. He's a tall man. He's about as tall as me and very slim and in football clothes. There are pictures of that too. But then Harpa took over and he became a little bit bigger. Not only in body, but he was also a great singer. So all of this has, of course, colored me as a singer, and it's colored my life. I've been singing. I didn't want to sing, actually, in the beginning, because I grew up in the back seat with my mother. By my side, I was 5 years old, and we were traveling and touring all over, and my father and a pianist in the front seat. And this, we did this for a couple of years, and it was very boring for a young boy. I didn't want to have this grown-up life and just sit there and sit at concerts and be in the, not able to laugh or anything. It was very serious business. So I decided not to start singing. So I tried to do something else after school and tried to be a salesman and do a lot of jobs. And after a while, my father, he started getting nervous about this. So one day he took me by my shoulders and looked me deep in my eyes and said, can't you try to sing? And I said, okay, I did. And from that day, I just couldn't stop. Music grabbed me. And that's what happens when you start with music. It grabs you. And once you're in there, you cannot leave. So I'm here. I'm still going to sing. Now nobody else wants to hire me because I don't know anything else to sing. But it's a fantastic world. I want to sing a little Swedish song for you. And it's comparable with Andy Musik, but it's a Swedish composer. His name was Carl Sjöberg, and he wrote this song. The song's name is Tonerna, and Tonerna means the tones, because how it is in life, we have a lot of thoughts, and the thoughts, they swirl around in our brain and mess us up many times, but the text says, but the tones, the music soothes and heals. Tonerna by Sjöberg. There is another picture of Yossi. And this man, I'm very proud of him. I'm very, very proud of him. And I'm proud to be a grandson of his. This is my father, Rolf. That's how he looked when he sang here in Berlin. I really wish we could have stayed longer and I could have stayed here. But times were hard and he got a job. He got a longing for Sweden, and my mother longed for Sweden too, and her family and everything. So we moved back in 1965. And I have a sister too, who was actually the one that started singing. They sent her to music school. And my mother didn't want to send me to music school. She thought I was too young and travel into town, and she thought it was scary to let a young boy go by bus and trams and everything downtown. But, of course, my sister, she got the opportunity, so she went there. But the first time we sang together, we did a concert together, and she was so nervous. So she was standing there shaking and everything. So she quit singing. She stopped singing, though she has a very beautiful voice. But she became an interior decorator and works as that in Sweden. And she works with art. And my mother is a painter, a very good painter. So art is in our family. And, of course, it's not always easy with art. Because the problem with art nowadays is that the whole society and everybody thinks that art and music and everything is a hobby. That's too sad that we have that. And that holds people back. There's not much money in art and music if you don't become one of the great stars. But how many stars are there? Of course, nowadays they call everybody a star, a football star, whatever you are, a chef star, whatever. Everybody is a star nowadays. So it's easy to become a star. But, I mean, to actually make it big in these art careers is hard. A lot of artists, they have a hard time making a living. So I think that's something we have to change. We have to see art as something big in our lives, and it means something to us. Everywhere, whatever you look at, this thing here, there's an artist behind. Whatever you look at, there is an artist behind. But we forget that a lot. This is my family, my artist family. And it's taking four generations all around the world to sing and perform. So I'm very thankful for that. And I'm very happy that you integrate art and music in your movement. Finally, before I leave here now, I want to perform one more song for you. And it's one of my favorite songs. It's been that forever. And it's Ludwig van Beethoven's Adelaide. That should be the final, for my final here right now. And it's been a pleasure talking to you, and hope to see you again.
boat.